Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Mistborn, The Final Empire by Brandon Sanderson. Narrated by Terrence Aselford. With performances by Kimberly Gilbert, David Jordan, Thomas Keegan, Bradley Smith, Michael John Casey, Tony Nam, Michael Glenn, Danny Gavigan, Mort Shelby, Ken Jackson, Nick DiPinto, Stephen Carpenter, Richard Rowan, Nora Ashrati, David Harris, Gregory Gorton, Christopher Graybill, Evan Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, Tim Carlin, Joe Brack, Gary Tells, Eric Messner, Dylan Lynch, and Scott McCormick. Mistborn, The Final Empire, Part 2 of 3.
What would it be like if every nation, from the Isles in the south to the Terrace Hills in the north, were united under a single government? What wonders could be achieved? What progress could be made if mankind were to permanently set aside its squabblings and join together? It is too much, I suppose, to even hope for. A single, unified empire of man? It could never happen.
Vin resisted the urge to pick at her noblewoman's dress. Even after a half week of being forced to wear one, Sazed's suggestion, she found the bulky garment uncomfortable. It pulled tightly at her waist and chest, then fell to the floor with several layers of ruffled fabric, making it difficult to walk. She kept feeling as if she were going to trip, and despite the gown's bulk, she felt as if she were somehow exposed by how tight it was through the chest, not to mention the neckline's low curve. Though she had exposed nearly as much skin when wearing normal buttoning shirts, this seemed different somehow. Still, she had to admit that the gown made quite a difference. The girl who stood in the mirror before her was a strange, foreign creature. The light blue dress, with its white ruffles and lace, matched the sapphire barrettes in her hair. Sazed claimed he wouldn't be happy until her hair was at least shoulder length, but he had still suggested that she purchase the brooch-like barrettes and put them just above each ear.
Often aristocrats don't hide their deficiencies. Instead, they highlight them, draw attention to your short hair, and instead of thinking you unfashionable, they might be impressed by the statement you are making.
She also wore a sapphire necklace, modest by noble standards, but still worth more than 200 boxings. It was complemented by a single ruby bracelet for accentuation. Apparently, the current fashion dictated a single splash of a different color to provide contrast. And it was all hers, paid for by crew funds. If she ran, taking the jewelry and her 3,000 boxings, she could live for decades. It was more tempting than she wanted to admit. Images of Cayman's men, their corpses twisted and dead in the quiet lair, kept returning to her. That was probably what waited for her if she remained. Why, then, didn't she go? She turned from the mirror, putting on a light blue silken shawl, the female aristocrat's version of a cloak. Why didn't she leave? Perhaps it was her promise to Kelsier. He had given her the gift of allomancy, and he depended on her. Perhaps it was her duty to the others. In order to survive, crews needed each person to do their separate job. Reen's training told her that these men were fools, but she was tempted, enticed, by the possibility that Kelsier and the others offered. In the end, it wasn't the wealth or the job's thrill that made her stay. It was the shadowed prospect, unlikely and unreasonable but still seductive, of a group whose members actually trusted one another. She had to stay. She had to know if it lasted or if it was, as Reen's growing whispers promised, all a lie. She turned and left her room, walking toward the front of Mansion Renault, where Sazed waited with a carriage. She had decided to stay, and that meant she had to do her part. It was time to make her first appearance as a noblewoman. The carriage shook suddenly, and Vin jumped in surprise. The vehicle continued normally, however, and Sazed didn't move from his place in the driver's seat. Vin flared her metals, tensing, as a figure dropped down off the top of the carriage and landed on the footman's rest just outside her door. Kelsier smiled as he peeked his head in the window.
You could have just asked us to pick you up.
No need.
Kelsier pulled open the carriage door and swung inside. It was already dark outside, and he wore his mist cloak.
I warned Sazed I'd be dropping by sometime during the trip.
And you didn't tell me?
I figured I still owed you for surprising me in that alleyway last week.
How very adult of you.
I've always been very confident in my immaturity. So, are you ready for this evening?
Vin shrugged, trying to hide her nervousness. She glanced down.
How... do I look?
Splendid. Just like a noble young lady. Don't be nervous, Vin. The disguise is perfect.
For some reason, that didn't feel like the answer she'd wanted to hear.
Kelsier.
Yes?
I've been meaning to ask this for a while. I understand that you think this is important, having a spy among the nobility, but... Well, do we really have to do it this way? Couldn't we get a street informant to tell us what we need to know about house politics?
Perhaps. But those men are called informants for a reason, Vin. Every question you ask them gives a clue about your true motives. Even meeting with them reveals a bit of information that they could sell to someone else. It's better to rely on them as little as possible. I don't send you into danger heedlessly, Vin. We do need a spy among the nobility. Informants generally get their information from servants, but most aristocrats are not fools. Important meetings go on where no servant can overhear them.
And you expect me to be able to get into such meetings?
Perhaps. Perhaps not. Either way, I've learned that it's always useful to have someone infiltrate the nobility. You and Sazed will overhear vital items that street informants wouldn't think important. In fact, just by being at these parties, even if you don't overhear anything, you will get us information.
How so?
Make note of the people who seem interested in you. Those will be of the houses we want to watch. If they pay attention to you, they're probably paying attention to Lord Renault. And there's one good reason why they would be doing that.
Weapons.
Renault's position as a weapons merchant will make him valuable to those who are planning military action. These are the houses on which I'll need to focus my attention. There should already be a sense of tension among the nobility. Hopefully, they're starting to wonder which houses are turning against the others. There hasn't been an all-out war among the great houses for over a century, but the last one was devastating. We need to replicate it.
That could mean the deaths of a lot of noblemen.
I can live with that. How about you?
Vin smiled despite her tension.
There's another reason for you to do this. Sometime during this fiasco of a plan of mine, we might need to face the Lord Ruler. I have a feeling that the fewer people we need to sneak into his presence, the better. Having a Ska Mistborn hiding among the nobility, well, it could be a powerful advantage.
The Lord Ruler, will he be there tonight?
No. There will be obligators in attendance, but probably no inquisitors, and certainly not the Lord Ruler himself. A party like this is far beneath his attention. Don't worry so much. Even if you were to meet him, you'd be safe. He can't read minds.
Are you sure?
Well, no. But if he can read minds, he doesn't do it to everyone he meets. I've known several Ska who pretended to be noblemen in his presence. I did it several times myself. Before.
Kelsier glanced down toward his scar-covered hands.
He caught you, eventually.
And he'll probably do so again. But don't worry about him for now. Our goal this evening is to establish Lady Villette Renault. You won't need to do anything dangerous or unusual. Just make an appearance. Then leave when Sazed tells you. We'll worry about building confidences later.
Vin nodded.
Good girl.
Kelsier reached out and pushed open the door.
I'll be hiding near the keep, watching and listening.
Vin nodded gratefully, and Kelsier jumped out of the carriage door, disappearing into the dark mists. Vin was unprepared for how bright Keep Venture would be in the darkness. The massive building was enveloped in an aura of misty light. As the carriage approached, Vin could see that 8 enormous lights blazed along the outside of the rectangular building. They were as bright as bonfires, yet far more steady, and they had mirrors arranged behind them to make them shine directly on the keep. Vin had trouble determining their purpose. The ball would happen indoors. Why light the outside of the building?
Head inside, please, Mr. Spin. Proper young ladies do not golf.
Vin shot him a glare he couldn't see, but ducked her head back inside, waiting with impatient nervousness as the carriage pulled up to the massive keep. It eventually rolled to a stop, and a Venture footman immediately opened her door. A second footman approached and held out a hand to help her down. Vin accepted his hand, trying with as much grace as possible to pull the frilled, bulky bottom of her dress out of the carriage. As she carefully descended, trying not to trip, she was grateful for the footman's steadying hand, and she finally realized why men were expected to help a lady out of her carriage. It wasn't a silly custom after all. The clothing was the silly part. Sazed surrendered the carriage and took his place a few steps behind her. He wore robes even more fine than his standard fare. Though they still maintained the same V-like pattern, they had a belted waist and wide, enveloping sleeves.
Forward, mistress. Up the carpet so your dress doesn't rub on the cobbles, and in through the main doors.
Vin nodded, trying to swallow her discomfort. She walked forward, passing noblemen and ladies in various suits and gowns. Though they weren't looking at her, she felt exposed. Her steps were nowhere near as graceful as those of the other ladies, who looked beautiful and comfortable in their gowns. Her hands began to sweat inside her silky blue-white gloves.
The Lady Valette Renault.
Sazed presented her invitation to the attendants. The two men, dressed in black and red servants' suits, bowed and waved her in. A crowd of aristocrats was pooling slightly in the foyer, waiting to enter the main hall.
What am I doing?
She could challenge mist and allomancy, thieves and burglaries, mist wraiths and beatings, yet facing these noblemen and their ladies, going amongst them in the light, visible, unable to hide, this terrified her.
Forward, mistress. Remember your lessons.
Hide. Find a corner. Shadows. Mists. Anything.
Vin kept her hands clasped rigidly before her, walking forward. Sazed walked beside her. Out of the corner of her eye, she could see concern on his normally calm face. And well, he should worry. Everything he had taught her seemed fleeting, vaporous, like the mists themselves. She couldn't remember names, customs, anything. She stopped just inside the foyer, and an imperious-looking nobleman in a black suit turned to regard her. The man looked her over with a dismissive glance, then turned away. Vin glanced apprehensively to the side. Several women were looking at her. And yet, it didn't feel like they were seeing her at all. They were studying the gown, the hair, and the jewelry. Vin glanced to the other side, where a group of younger men were watching her. They saw the neckline, the pretty dress, and the makeup, but they didn't see her. None of them could see Vin. They could only see the face she had put on, the face she wanted them to see. They saw Lady Valette. It was as if Vin weren't there, as if she were hiding right in front of their eyes. And suddenly, her tension began to retreat. Sazed's training returned, and she adopted the look of a girl amazed by her first formal ball. She stepped to the side, handing her shawl to an attendant, and Sazed relaxed beside her. Vin shot him a smile, then swept forward into the main hall. She could do this. She was still nervous, but the moment of panic was over. She didn't need shadows or corners. She just needed a mask of sapphires, makeup, and blue fabric. The Venture main hall was a grand and imposing sight. 4 or 5 daunting stories high, the hall was several times as long as it was wide. Enormous, rectangular stained glass windows ran in rows along the wall, and the strange, powerful light outside shone on them directly, throwing a cascade of colors across the room. Massive, ornate stone pillars were set into the walls, running between the windows. Just before the pillars met the floor, the wall fell away, indenting and creating a single-story gallery beneath the windows themselves. Dozens of white-clothed tables sat in this area, shadowed behind the pillars and beneath the overhang. In the distance, at the far end of the hallway, Vin could make out a low balcony set into the wall, and this held a smaller group of tables.
The dining table of Lord Strath Venture.
Seiza gestured toward the far balcony.
And those lights outside?
Limelights, mistress. I'm not certain the process used. Somehow the quick limestones can be heated to brilliance without melting them.
A string orchestra played on a platform to her left, providing music for the couples who danced in the very center of the hall. To her right, serving tables held platter upon platter of foods, being attended by scurrying serving men in white. Sazed approached an attendant and presented Vin's invitation. The man nodded, then whispered something in a younger servant's ear. The young man bowed to Vin, then led the way into the room.
I asked for a small solitary table. You won't need to mingle during this visit, I think. Just be seen.
Vin nodded gratefully.
A solitary table will mark you as single. Eat slowly. Once your meal is through, men will come to ask you to dance.
You didn't teach me to dance.
There wasn't time, mistress. Worry not. Respectfully and rightly, you can refuse these men. They will assume that you are simply flustered by your first ball, and no harm will be done.
Vin nodded, and the serving man led them to a small table near the center of the hallway. Vin seated herself in the only chair, while Sazed ordered her meal. He then stepped up to stand behind her chair. Vin sat primly, waiting. Most of the tables lay just beneath the overhang of the gallery, up close to the dancing, and that left a corridor-like walkway behind them near the wall. Couples and groups passed along this. Occasionally, someone gestured or nodded toward Vin. Well, that part of Kelsier's plan is working. She was getting noticed. She had to force herself not to cringe or sink down in her chair, however, as a high Prelan strolled along the pathway behind her. He wasn't the one she had met, fortunately, though he had the same gray robes and dark tattoos around his eyes. Actually, there were a fair number of obligators at the party. They strolled about, mingling with the partygoers. And yet, there was an aloofness to them, a division. They hovered about, almost like chaperones.
The garrison watches the ska. Apparently, the obligators perform a similar function for the nobility.
It was an odd sight. She'd always thought of the noblemen as being free, and truthfully, they were far more confident than the ska. Many seemed to be enjoying themselves, and the obligators didn't seem to be acting really as police or even specifically as spies, and yet they were there, hovering about, joining in conversations, a constant reminder of the Lord Ruler and his empire. Vin turned her attention away from the obligators. Their presence still made her a bit uncomfortable, and instead focused on something else, the beautiful windows. Sitting where she was, she could see some of the ones directly across and up from where she sat. They were religious, like many scenes preferred by the aristocracy. Perhaps it was to show devotion, or perhaps it was required. Vin didn't know enough, but likely that was something Valette wouldn't know either, so it was all right. She did, fortunately, recognize some of the scenes, mostly because of Sazed's teachings. He seemed to know as much about the Lord Ruler's mythology as he did about other religions, though it seemed odd to her that he would study the very religion he found so oppressive. Central to the many windows was the deepness, dark black, or in window terms, violet. It was formless, with vengeful, tentacle-like masses creeping across several windows. Vin looked up at it, along with the brilliantly colored depictions of the Lord Ruler, and found herself a little bit transfixed by the backlit scenes.
What was it? The deepness? Why depict it so formlessly? Why not show what it really was?
She'd never really wondered about the deepness before, but Sazed's lessons left her wondering. Her instincts whispered scam. The Lord Ruler had invented some terrible menace that he'd been able to destroy in the past, therefore earning his place as emperor. And yet, staring up at the horrible, twisting thing, Vin could almost believe.
What if something like that had existed? And if it had, how had the Lord Ruler managed to defeat it?
Vin shook her head at the thoughts. Already, she was beginning to think too much like a noblewoman. She was admiring the beauty of the decorations, thinking about what they meant, without giving more than a passing thought to the wealth that had created them. It was just that everything here was so wondrous and ornate. The pillars in the hall weren't just normal columns. They were carved masterpieces. Wide banners hung from the ceiling just above the windows, and the arching, lofty ceiling was crisscrossed by structural buttressings and dotted with capstones. Somehow she knew each of those capstones was intricately carved, despite the fact that they were too far away to be seen from below. And the dancers matched, perhaps even outshone, the exquisite setting. Couples moved gracefully, stepping to the music with seemingly effortless motions. Many were even chatting with one another while they danced. The ladies moved freely in their dresses, many of which, Vin noticed, made her own frilly garment look plain by comparison. Sazed was right. Long hair was certainly the fashion, though an equal number kept their hair up as left it down. Surrounded by the majestic hall, the sharp-suited noblemen looked different somehow, distinguished. Were these the same creatures that beat her friends and enslaved the Ska? They seemed too perfect, too well-mannered for such horrible acts.
I wonder if they even noticed the outside world.
She crossed her arms on the table as she watched the dancing.
Perhaps they can't see behind their keeps and their balls, just like they can't see past my dress and makeup.
Sazed tapped her shoulder. Vin adopted a more ladylike posture. The meal arrived a few minutes later, a feast of such strange flavors that she would have been daunted had she not eaten similar fare often during the last few months. Sazed's lessons might have omitted dancing, but they were quite extensive regarding dining etiquette, for which Vin was grateful. As Kelsier had said, her main purpose of the evening was to make an appearance, and so it was more important that she make a proper one. She ate delicately, as instructed, and that allowed her to be slow and meticulous. She didn't relish the idea of being asked to dance. She was half afraid she'd panic again if anyone actually spoke to her. However, a meal could only be extended so long, especially one with a lady's small portions. She soon finished and set her fork across the plate, indicating that she was done. The first suitor approached not 2 minutes later.
Lady Valette Renault?
The young man bowed just slightly. He wore a green vest beneath his long, dark suit coat.
I am Lord Ryan Strobe. Would you care to dance?
My lord, you are kind, but this is my first ball, and everything here is so grand. I fear that I'll stumble from nervousness on the dance floor. But perhaps next time?
Of course, my lady.
He gave a courteous nod, then withdrew.
Very well done, mistress. You will, of course, have to dance with him at the next ball. We shall surely have you trained by then, I think.
Maybe he won't attend.
Perhaps, but not likely. The young nobility are quite fond of their nightly diversions.
They do this every night?
Nearly. The balls are, after all, a prime reason people come to Lúthedain. If one is in town and there is a ball, and there almost always is, one generally attends, especially if one is young and unmarried. You won't be expected to attend quite so frequently, but we should probably get you up to attending 2 or 3 a week.
2 or 3 a week? I'm going to need more gowns.
Ah, thinking like a noblewoman already. Now, mistress, if you will excuse me.
Excuse you?
To the steward's dinner. A servant of my rank is generally dismissed once my master's meal is finished. I hesitate to go and leave you, but that room will be filled with the self-important servants of the high nobility. There will be conversations there that Master Kelsier wishes me to overhear.
You're leaving me by myself?
You've done well so far, mistress. No major mistakes, or at least none that wouldn't be expected of a lady new to court.
Like what?
We shall discuss them later. Just remain at your table, sipping your wine. Try not to get it refilled too often, and wait for my return. If other young men approach, turn them away as delicately as you did the first.
Vin nodded hesitantly.
I shall return in about an hour.
Sazed remained, however, as if waiting for something.
You are dismissed.
Thank you, mistress.
Sazed bowed and withdrew, leaving her alone.
Not alone. Kelsier's out there somewhere, watching in the night.
The thought comforted her, though she wished she didn't feel the empty space beside her chair quite so keenly. 3 more young men approached her for dances, but each one accepted her polite rejection. No others came after them. Word had probably gotten around that she wasn't interested in dancing. She memorized the names of the 4 men who had approached her. Kelsier would want to know them, and began to wait. Oddly, she soon found herself growing bored. The room was well ventilated, but she still felt hot beneath the layers of fabric. Her legs were especially bad since they had to deal with her ankle-long undergarments. The long sleeves didn't help either, though the silky material was soft against her skin. The dancing continued, and she watched with interest for a time. However, her attention soon turned to the obligators. Interestingly, they did seem to serve some sort of function at the party. Though they often stood apart from the groups of chatting nobility, occasionally they would join in. And every so often, a group would pause and seek out an obligator, waving one over with a respectful gesture. Vin frowned, trying to decide what she was missing. Eventually, a group at a nearby table waved to a passing obligator. The table was too far away to hear unaided, but with tin. She reached inside to burn the metal, but then paused.
Copper first.
She turned the metal on. She would have to grow accustomed to leaving it on almost all the time so that she wouldn't expose herself. Her allomancy hidden, she closed her eyes and burned tin.
Share news of my engagement with him before anyone else.
Vian opened her eyes a slit. It was one of the noblemen at the table.
Very well. I witness and record this.
The nobleman reached out a hand. Vin extinguished her tin, opening her eyes all the way in time to see the obligator wandering away from the table, slipping something, likely the coins, into a pocket of his robes.
Interesting.
Unfortunately, the people at that table soon rose and went their separate ways, leaving Vin without anyone close enough to eavesdrop upon. Her boredom returned as she watched the obligator stroll across the room toward one of his companions. She idly watched the two obligators until she realized something. She recognized one of them. Not the one who had taken the money earlier, but his companion, an older man. Short and firm-featured, he stood with an imperious air. Even the other obligator seemed deferential to him. At first, Vin thought her familiarity came from her visit to the Canton of Finance with Cayman, and she felt a stab of panic. Then, however, she realized that this wasn't the same man. She'd seen him before, but not there. He was...
My father...
Reen had pointed him out once when they had first come to Luthadel a year ago. He had been inspecting the workers at a local forge. Reen had taken Vin, sneaking her in, insisting that she at least see her father once, though she still didn't understand why. She had memorized the face anyway. She resisted the urge to shrink down in her chair. There was no way the man would be able to recognize her. He didn't even know she existed. She forcibly turned her attention away from him, looking up at the windows instead. She couldn't get that good a look at them, however, because the pillars and overhang restricted her view. As she sat, she noticed something she hadn't seen before. A lofty inset balcony that ran just above the entire far wall. It was like a counterpart to the alcove beneath the windows, except it ran at the top of the wall, between the stained glass windows and the ceiling. She could see movement upon it, couples and singles strolling along, looking down upon the party below. Her instincts drew her toward the balcony from where she could watch the party without being seen herself. It would also give her a wonderful view of the banners and the windows directly above her table, not to mention let her study the stonework without seeming to gawk. Sazed had told her to stay, but the more she sat, the more she found her eyes drawn toward the hidden balcony. She itched to stand up and move, to stretch her legs and perhaps air them out a bit. The presence of her father, oblivious of her or not, served only as another motivation for her to leave the main floor.
He doesn't like anyone else is asking me to dance. And I've done what Kelsier wanted. I've been seen by the nobility.
She paused, then waved for a serving boy.
Yes, Lady Renault?
How do I get up there?
Vin pointed toward the balcony.
There are stairs just to the side of the orchestra, my lady. Climb them to the top of the landing.
Vin nodded her thanks. Then, determined, she stood and made her way to the front of the room. No one gave her passing more than a glance, and she walked with more confidence as she crossed the hallway to the stairwell. The stone corridor twisted upward, curling upon itself, its steps short but steep. Little stained glass windows, no wider than her hand, ran up the outside wall, though they were dark in color, lacking backlight. Vin climbed eagerly, working away her restless energy, but she soon began to strain from the weight of the dress and the difficulty of holding it up so high that she didn't trip. A spark of burned pewter, however, made the climb effortless enough that she didn't sweat and ruin her makeup. The climb proved to be worth the effort. The upper balcony was dark, lit only by several small blue-glass lanterns on the walls, and it gave an amazing view of the stained-glass windows. The area was quiet, and Vin felt practically alone as she approached the iron railing between two pillars, looking down. The stone tiles of the floor below formed a pattern she hadn't noticed, a kind of free-form curving of gray upon white.
Mists!
Vin leaned against the railing. It, like the lantern bracket behind her, was intricate and detailed. Both had been wrought in the form of thick, curving vines. To her sides, the tops of the pillars were carved into stone animals that appeared frozen in the motion of jumping off of the balcony.
Now, see, here's the problem with going to refill your cup of wine.
Vin jumped and spun. A young man stood behind her. His suit wasn't the finest she had seen, nor was his vest as bright as most. Both coat and shirt seemed to fit too loosely, and his hair was just a bit disheveled. He carried a cup of wine, and the outer pocket of his suit coat bulged with the shape of a book that was just a bit too big for its confines.
The problem is, you return to find that your favorite spot has been stolen by a pretty girl. Now, a gentleman would move on to another place, leaving the lady to her contemplations. However, this is the best spot on the balcony. It's the only place close enough to a lantern to have good reading light.
I'm sorry, my lord.
Ah, see, now I feel guilty. All for a cup of wine. Look, there's plenty of room for two people here. Just scoot over a bit.
Vin paused. Could she politely refuse? He obviously wanted her to stay near him. Did he know who she was? Should she try to find out his name so she could tell Kelsier? She stepped a bit to the side, and the man took a place next to her. He leaned back against the side pillar, and surprisingly took out his book and began to read. He was right. The lantern shined directly on the pages. Vin stood for a moment watching him, but he seemed completely absorbed. He didn't even pause to look up at her.
Isn't he going to pay me any attention at all? Maybe I should have worn a fancier dress.
The man sipped at his wine, focused on the book.
Do you always read at balls?
The young man looked up.
Whenever I can get away with it.
Doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose of coming? Why attend if you're just going to avoid socializing?
You're up here too.
I just wanted to get a brief view of the hall.
Oh? And why did you refuse all three men who asked you to dance?
Vin paused. The man smiled, then turned back to his book.
There were four, and I refused them because I don't know how to dance very well.
The man lowered his book slightly, eyeing her.
You know, you're a lot less timid than you look.
Timid? I'm not the one staring at his book when there's a young lady standing by him, never having properly introduced himself.
Now, see, you sound like my father. Far better looking, but just as grumpy.
Vin glared at him.
Very well. Let me be a gentleman, then.
He bowed to her with a refined, formal step.
I am Lord Elend. Lady Valette Renault, might I have the pleasure of sharing this balcony with you whilst I read?
Vin folded her arms.
Elend? Family name or given name? Should I even care? He just wanted his spot back. But how did he know that I'd refuse dancing partners?
Somehow, she had a suspicion that Kelsier would want to hear about this particular conversation. Oddly, she didn't feel a desire to shrug this man away as she had the others. Instead, she felt another stab of annoyance as he again raised his book.
You still haven't told me why you would rather read than participate.
The man lowered the book again.
Well, see, I'm not exactly the best dancer, either.
Ah.
But that's only part of it. You may not realize this yet, but it's not that hard to get over-partied. Once you attend 500 or 600 of these balls, they start to feel a bit repetitive.
You'd probably learn to dance better if you practiced.
You're not going to let me get back to my book, are you?
I wasn't intending to.
Elend tucked the book back into his jacket pocket, which was beginning to show signs of book-shaped wear.
Well then, do you want to go dance instead?
Vin froze. Elend smiled nonchalantly.
Lord, he's either incredibly smooth or socially incompetent.
That's a no, I assume? Good. I thought I should offer, since we've established that I'm a gentleman. However, I doubt the couples below would appreciate us trampling their toes.
Agreed. What were you reading?
Delestini. Trials of Monument. Heard of it?
Vin shook her head.
Oh well, not many have.
Elland leaned over the railing, looking below.
So, what do you think of your first experience at court?
It's very... overwhelming.
Say what you will about House Venture, they know how to throw a party.
You don't like House Venture, then?
Perhaps this was one of the rivalries Kelsier was watching for.
Not particularly, no. They're an ostentatious lot, even for high nobility. They can't just have a party. They have to throw the best party. Never mind that they run their servants ragged setting it up, then beat the poor things in retribution when the hall isn't perfectly clean the very next morning.
Not words I'd expect to hear from a nobleman.
But, well, never mind that. I think your terrace man is looking for you.
Vin started, glancing over the side of the balcony. Sure enough, Sazed's tall form stood by her now empty table, speaking to a serving boy.
I've got to go.
She turned toward the stairwell.
Ah, well then, back to reading it is.
He gave her a half wave of farewell, but he had his book open before she passed the first step. Vin reached the bottom and Sazed saw her immediately.
I'm sorry.
Do not apologize to me, mistress. It is both unseemly and unnecessary. Moving about a bit was a good idea, I think. I would have suggested it had you not seemed so nervous.
Is it time for us to go, then?
It is a proper time to withdraw, if you wish.
Sazed glanced up at the balcony.
May I ask what you were doing up there, mistress?
I wanted to get a better look at the windows, but I ended up talking to someone. He seemed interested in me at first, but now I don't think he ever intended to pay me much attention. It doesn't matter. He didn't seem important enough to bother Kelsier with his name.
Who was it you were speaking to?
The man in the corner there, on the balcony.
One of Lord Venture's friends?
Is one of them named Elland?
You were chatting with Lord Elland Venture?
Yes.
Did he ask you to dance?
But I don't think he meant it.
Oh dear. So much for controlled anonymity.
Venture? Like, keep Venture?
Heir to the house title.
Huh. He was a bit annoying. In a pleasant sort of way.
We shouldn't be discussing this here. You're far, far below his station. Come, let us retire. I shouldn't have gone away to the dinner.
He led Vin to the entryway. She got one more glimpse into the main chamber as she retrieved her shawl, and she burned tin, squinting against the light and seeking the balcony above. He held the book closed in one hand, and she could have sworn that he was looking down in her direction. She smiled and let Sazed usher her to their carriage.
I know that I shouldn't let a simple Pac-Man perturb me. However, he is from Terrace, where the prophecies originated. If anyone could spot a fraud, would it not be he? Nevertheless, I continue my trek, going where the scribbled auguries proclaim that I will meet my destiny. Walking, feeling Rashek's eyes on my back, jealous, mocking, hating.
Vin sat with her legs crossed beneath her on one of Lord Renault's fine easy chairs. It felt good to be rid of the bulky dress, instead getting back to a more familiar shirt and trousers. However, Sazed's calm displeasure made her want to squirm. He stood on the other side of the room, and Vin got the distinct impression that she was in trouble. Sazed had questioned her in depth, seeking out every detail of her conversation with Lord Elland. Sazed's inquiries had been respectful, of course, but they had also been forceful. The terraceman seemed, in Vin's opinion, unduly worried about her exchange with the young nobleman. They hadn't really talked about anything important, and Elland himself was decidedly unspectacular for a great house lord. But there had been something odd about him, something Vin hadn't admitted to Sazed. She'd felt comfortable with Elland. Looking back on the experience, she realized that for those few moments, she hadn't really been Lady Valette. Nor had she been Vin. For that part of her, the timid crew member, was almost as fake as Valette was. No, she'd simply been whoever she was. It was a strange experience. She had occasionally felt the same way during her time with Kelsier and the others, but in a more limited manner. How had Elland been able to evoke her true self so quickly and so thoroughly?
Maybe he used allomancy on me.
Elend was a high nobleman. Perhaps he was a soother. Maybe there was more to the conversation than she had thought. Vin sat back in her chair, frowning to herself. She'd had copper on, and that meant he couldn't have used emotional allomancy on her. Somehow he had simply gotten her to let her guard down. Vin thought back to the experience, thinking about how oddly comfortable she'd felt. In retrospect, it was clear that she hadn't been careful enough.
I'll be more cautious next time.
She assumed that they would meet again. They'd better. A servant entered and walked over to Sazed. A quick burn of tin let Vin hear the conversation.
Master Kelsier has returned.
Please send word to Lord Renault.
The white-clothed servant nodded, leaving the room.
The rest of you may leave.
The room's attendants scampered away. Sazed's quiet vigil had forced them to stand, waiting in the tense room, not speaking or moving. Kelsier and Lord Renault arrived together. As always, Renault wore a rich suit cut in the unfamiliar Western style. The aging man kept his gray mustache trimmed thin and neat, and he walked with a confident air. Even after spending an entire evening among the nobility, Vin was again struck by his aristocratic bearing. Kelsier still wore his mist cloak.
Says, you have news?
I am afraid so, Master Kelsier. It appears that Mistress Vin caught the attention of Lord Elend Venture at the ball tonight.
Elend? Isn't he the heir?
Yes, indeed. I met the lad perhaps 4 years ago when his father visited the West. He struck me as a bit undignified for one of his station.
4 years? There's no way he's been imitating Lord Renault for that long. Kelsier only escaped the pits 2 years ago.
Vin eyed the imposter, but, as always, was unable to detect a flaw in his bearing.
How attentive was the boy?
He asked her to dance. But Mistress Vin was wise enough to decline. Apparently their meeting was a matter of idle happenstance, but I fear she may have caught his eye.
You taught her too well, Says. In the future, Vin, perhaps you should try to be a little less charming.
Why? I thought we wanted me to be well-liked.
Not by a man as important as Elend Venture, child. We sent you to court so you could make alliances, not scandals.
Venture is young, eligible, and heir to a powerful house. Your having a relationship with him could make serious problems for us. The women of the court would be jealous of you, and the older men would disapprove of the rank difference. You'd alienate yourself from large sections of the court. To get the information we need the aristocracy to see you as uncertain, unimportant, and most importantly, unthreatening.
Besides, child, it's unlikely that Elend Venture has any real interest in you. He's known to be a court eccentric. He is probably just trying to heighten his reputation by doing the unexpected.
Vin felt her face flush.
He's probably right.
Still, she couldn't help feeling annoyed at the three of them, especially Kelsier.
Yes, it's probably best that you avoid Venture completely. Try to offend him or something. Give him a couple of those glares you do.
Vin regarded Kelsier with a flat look.
That's the one.
I saw my father at the ball tonight.
Really?
I recognized him from a time my brother pointed him out to me.
What is this?
Vin's father is an obligator, and apparently an important one if he has enough pull to go to a ball like this. Do you know what his name is?
Vin shook her head.
Description?
Bald. Eye tattoos.
Just point him out to me sometime, all right?
Vin nodded, and Kelsier turned to Sazed.
Now, did you bring me the names of which nobleman asked Vin to dance?
She gave me a list, Master Kelsier. I also have several interesting tidbits to share from the steward's meal.
Good. You'll have to save them for tomorrow morning, though. I've got to be going.
Going? But you just got in.
That's the funny thing about arriving somewhere, Vin. Once you're there, the only thing you can really do is leave again. Get some sleep. You're looking a bit ragged.
Kelsier waved a farewell to the group, then ducked out of the room.
Too nonchalant. And too secretive. He usually tells us which families he plans to hit.
I think I will retire.
Sazed eyed her suspiciously, but let her go. Vin scrambled up the stairs to her room, then threw on her mist cloak and pushed open her balcony doors. Mist poured into the room, She flared iron and was rewarded with the sight of a fading blue metal line pointing into the distance.
Let's see where you're going, Master Kelsier.
Vin burned steel, pushing herself into the cold, humid autumn night. Tin enhanced her eyes, making the wet air tickle her throat as she breathed. She pushed hard behind her, then pulled slightly on the gates below. The maneuver swung her in a soaring arc over the steel gates, which she then pushed against to throw herself farther into the air. She kept an eye on the trail of blue that pointed toward Kelsier, following him at enough of a distance to remain unseen. She wasn't carrying any metal, not even coins, and she kept her copper burning to hide her use of allomancy. Theoretically, only sound could alert Kelsier to her presence, and so she moved as quietly as possible. Surprisingly, Kelsier didn't head into town. After passing the mansion's gates, he turned north out of the city.
Oh.
Vin followed, landing and running quietly on the rough ground.
Where is he going? Is he circling Felice? Heading for one of the peripheral mansions?
Kelsier continued northward for a short time, then his metal line suddenly began to grow dim. Vin paused, stopping beside a group of stumpy trees. The line faded at a rapid rate. Kelsier had suddenly sped up. She broke into a dash. Ahead, Kelsier's line vanished into the night. Vin slowed. She flared her iron, but it was barely enough to catch a glimpse of him disappearing again in the distance. She'd never keep up. Her flared iron, however, showed her something else. She frowned, continuing forward until she reached a stationary source of metal, two small bronze bars stuck into the ground a couple of feet from each other. She flipped one up into her hand, then looked into the swirling mists to the north.
He's jumping. But why?
Jumping was faster than walking, but there didn't seem much point to it in the empty wilderness.
Unless...
She walked forward, and she soon found two more bronze bars embedded in the earth. Vin glanced backward. It was hard to tell in the night, but it seemed that the four bars made a line that pointed directly toward Luthadel.
So that's how he does it.
Kelsier had an uncanny ability to move between Luthadel and Felice with remarkable speed. She'd assumed that he was using horses, but it appeared that there was a better way. He, or perhaps someone before him, had laid down an allomantic road between the two cities. She gripped the first bar in her palm. She'd needed to soften her landing if she was wrong. Then stepped up in front of the second pair of bars and launched herself into the air. She pushed hard, flaring her steel, throwing herself as far up into the sky as she could. As she flew, she flared her iron, searching for other sources of metal. They soon appeared, two directly north and two more in the distance to either side of her.
The ones on the sides are for course corrections.
She'd have to keep moving directly north if she wanted to stay on the Bronze Highway. She nudged herself slightly to the left, moving so that she passed directly between the two adjacent bars of the main path, then hurled herself forward again in an arcing leap. She got the hang of it quickly, hopping from point to point, never dropping even close to the ground. In just a few minutes, she had the rhythm down so well that she barely had to do any corrections from the sides. Her progress across the scraggly landscape was incredibly swift. The mists blew by, her mist cloak whipping behind her. Still, she forced herself to speed up. She'd spent too long studying the bronze bars. She had to catch up to Kelsier, otherwise she'd arrive in Luthadel, but not know where to go from there. She began to throw herself from point to point at an almost reckless speed, watching desperately for some sign of allomantic motion. After about 10 minutes of leaping, a line of blue finally appeared ahead of her, one pointing up rather than down toward the bars in the ground. Then a second line appeared, and a third. Vin frowned, letting herself drop to the ground. She flared tin, and a massive shadow appeared in the night before her, its top sparkling with balls of light.
The city wall? So soon? I made the trip twice as fast as a man on horseback.
However, that meant she'd lost Kelsier. She frowned to herself. She used the bar she'd been carrying to throw herself up onto the battlements. Once she landed on the damp stone, she reached behind and pulled the bar up into her hand. Then she approached the other side of the wall. She hopped up and crouched on the stone railing as she scanned the city.
What now? Head back to Felice? Stop by Clubs' shop and see if he went there?
She sat uncertainly for a moment. She then threw herself off the wall and began making her way across the rooftops. She wondered, randomly, pushing off of window clasps and bits of metal, using the bronze bar, then pulling it back into her hand, when long jumps were necessary. It wasn't until she arrived that she realized she'd unconsciously gone to a specific destination. Keep Venture rose before her in the night. The limelights had been extinguished, and only a few phantom torches burned near guard posts. Vin crouched on the lip of a rooftop, trying to decide what had led her back to the massive keep. The cool wind ruffled her hair and cloak, and she thought she felt a few tiny raindrops on her cheek. She sat for a long moment, her toes growing cold. Then she noticed motion to her right. She immediately flared her tin. Kelsier sat on a rooftop not three houses away, just barely lit by ambient light. He didn't seem to have noticed her. He was watching the keep, his face too distant for her to read his expression. Vin watched him with suspicious eyes. He'd dismissed her meeting with Elend, but perhaps it worried him more than he'd admitted. A sudden spike of fear made her tense.
Could he be here to kill Elend? The assassination of a high noble heir would certainly create tension amongst the nobility.
Vin waited apprehensively. Eventually, however, Kelsier stood and walked away, pushing himself off the rooftop and into the air. Vin dropped her bronze bar. It would give her away, and dashed after him. Her iron showed blue lines moving in the distance, and she hurriedly jumped out over the street and pushed herself off a sewer grate below, determined not to lose him again. He moved toward the center of the city. Vin frowned, trying to guess his destination. Keep Eric Keller was in that direction, and it was a major supplier of armaments. Perhaps Kelsier planned to do something to interrupt its supplies, making House Renault more vital to the local nobility. Vin landed on a rooftop and paused, watching Kelsier shoot off into the night.
He's moving fast again.
Vin jumped back, flaring pewter.
You're supposed to be in bed, young lady.
But...
My coin pouch. A good thief can steal clever tricks as easily as he steals boxings. I've started being more careful since you tailed me last week. At first, I assumed you were a venture mistborn.
They have some?
I'm sure they do. Most of the great houses do. But your friend Elend isn't one of them. He's not even a misting.
How do you know? He could be hiding it.
He nearly died in a raid a couple of years ago. If there were ever a time to show your powers, it would have been then.
Vin nodded, still looking down, not meeting Kelsier's eyes. He sat down on the slanted rooftop, one leg hanging over the side.
Have a seat.
Vin settled herself on the tile roof across from him. Above, the cool mists continued to churn, and it had begun to drizzle slightly, but that wasn't much different from the regular nightly humidity.
I can't have you tailing me like this, Vin. Do you remember our discussion about trust?
If you trusted me, you'd tell me where you were going.
Not necessarily. Maybe I just don't want you and the others to worry about me.
Everything you do is dangerous. Why would we worry any more if you told us specifics?
Some tasks are even more dangerous than others.
Vin paused, then glanced to the side in the direction Kelsier had been going, toward the center of the city. Toward Credic Shaw, the Hill of a Thousand Spires, the Lord Ruler's palace.
You're going to confront the Lord Ruler. You said last week that you were going to pay him a visit.
Visit is perhaps too strong a word. I am going to the palace, but I sincerely hope I don't run into the Lord Ruler himself. I'm not ready for him yet. Regardless, you're going straight to Clubs' shop.
Vin nodded.
You're just going to try and follow me again, aren't you?
Vin paused, then she nodded again.
Why?
Because I want to help. So far, my part in this all has essentially boiled down to going to a party. But I'm mistborn. You've trained me yourself. I am not going to sit back and let everyone else do dangerous work while I sit, eat dinner, and watch people dance.
What you're doing at those balls is important.
Vin nodded, glancing down. She would just let him go, then she'd follow him. Part of her reasoning was what she'd said before. She was beginning to feel a camaraderie for this crew, and it was like nothing she had ever known. She wanted to be part of what it was doing. She wanted to help. However, another part of her whispered that Kelsier wasn't telling her everything. He might trust her, he might not. However, he certainly had secrets. The 11th metal, and therefore the Lord Ruler, were involved in those secrets. Kelsier caught her eyes, and he must have seen her intention to follow in them.
I'm serious, Vin. You can't go with me.
Why not? If what you're doing is so dangerous, wouldn't it be safer if you had another Mistborn watching your back?
You still don't know all of the metals.
Only because you haven't taught me.
You need more practice.
The best practice is doing. My brother trained me to steal by taking me on burglaries.
It's too dangerous.
Kelsier, we're planning to overthrow the final empire. I don't really expect to live until the end of the year anyway. You keep telling the others what an advantage it is to have two Mistborn on the team. Well, it's not going to be much of an advantage unless you actually let me be a Mistborn. How long are you going to wait? Until I'm ready? I don't think that will ever happen.
When we first met, half the time I couldn't get you to say a word. Now you're lecturing me.
Vin blushed. Finally, Kelsier reached beneath his cloak to pull something out.
I can't believe I'm considering this.
He handed her the bit of metal. Vin studied the tiny, silvery ball of metal. It was so reflective and bright that it almost seemed to be a drop of liquid, yet it was solid to the touch.
Atium, 10th and most powerful of the known allomantic metals. That bead is worth more than the entire bag of boxings I gave you before.
This little bit?
Atium only comes from one place, the pits of Hathsin, where the Lord Ruler controls its production and distribution. The great houses get to buy a monthly stipend of atium, which is one of the main ways the Lord Ruler controls them. Go ahead and swallow it.
Vin eyed the bit of metal, uncertain she wanted to waste something so valuable.
You can't sell it. Thieving crews try, but they get tracked down and executed. The Lord Ruler is very protective of his atium supply.
Vin nodded, then swallowed the metal. Immediately, she felt a new well of power appear within her, waiting to be burned.
All right. Burn it as soon as I start walking.
Vin nodded. As he began to walk forward, she drew upon her well of strength and burned atium. Kelsier seemed to fuzz slightly to her eyes. Then a translucent, wraith-like image shot out into the mists in front of him. The image looked just like Kelsier, and it walked just a few steps in front of him. A very faint, trailing afterimage extended from the duplicate back to Kelsier himself. It was like a reverse shadow. The duplicate did everything Kelsier did, except the image moved first. It turned, and then Kelsier followed its same path.
Atium lets you see just a little bit into the future. Or, at least, it lets you see what people are going to do a little bit in the future. In addition, it enhances your mind, allowing you to deal with new information, allowing you to react more quickly and collectively.
The shadow stopped, then Kelsier walked up to it, stopping as well. Suddenly, the shadow reached out and slapped her. Vin moved reflexively, putting her hand up just as Kelsier's real hand began to move. She caught his arm mid-swing.
While you're burning atium, nothing can surprise you. You can swing a dagger, knowing confidently that your enemies will run right into it. You can dodge attacks with ease because you'll be able to see where every blow will fall. Atium makes you quite nearly invincible. It enhances your mind, making you able to make use of all the new information.
Suddenly, dozens of other images shot from Kelsier's body. Each one sprang in a different direction, some striding across the roof, others jumping into the air. Vin released his arm, rising and backing away in confusion.
I just burned atium too. I can see what you're going to do, and that changes what I'm going to do, which, in turn, changes what you're going to do. The images reflect each of the possible actions we might take.
It's confusing.
Vin watched the insane jumble of images, old ones constantly fading, new ones constantly appearing.
The only way to defeat someone who is burning atium is to burn it yourself. That way, neither of you has an advantage.
The images vanished.
What did you do?
Nothing. Your ATM probably ran out.
It burned so quickly.
Kelsier sat down again.
That's probably the fastest fortune you've ever blown, eh?
It seems like such a waste.
ATM is only valuable because of allomancy. So, if we didn't burn it, it wouldn't be worth the fortune that it is. Of course, if we do burn it, we make it even more rare. It's kind of an interesting relationship. Ask Ham about it sometimes. He loves talking about atium economics. Anyway, any Mistborn you face will probably have atium. However, they'll be reluctant to use it. In addition, they won't have swallowed it yet. Atium is fragile, and your digestive juices will ruin it in a matter of hours. So, you have to walk a line between conservation and effectiveness. If it looks like your opponent is using ATM, then you'd better use yours too.
However, make sure he doesn't lure you into using up your reserve before he does.
Does this mean you're taking me tonight?
I'll probably regret it, but I don't see any way to make you stay behind. Short of tying you up, perhaps. But I warn you, Vin, this could be dangerous. Very dangerous. I don't intend to meet the Lord Ruler, but I do intend to sneak into his stronghold. I think I know where we might find a clue on how to defeat him.
Vin smiled, stepping forward as Kelsier waved her toward him. He reached into his pouch and pulled out a vial, which he handed to her. It was like regular allomantic vials, except the liquid inside held only a single drop of metal. The atium bead was several times larger than the one he had given her to practice on.
Don't use it unless you have to. You need any other metals?
I burned up most of my steel getting here.
Kelsier handed her another vial.
First, let's go retrieve my coin pouch.